I'll tell you what, guys and gals, I am wiped out, and I'm usually the guy who is crazy positive. You know, one of our core values here at CARE is be a beacon of positivity and possibility, and something I'm just so charged up about. And I really, I don't just try to, I really do embody that every day in my life. And, I wrapped up two podcasts today. I had a big, big week last week. My wife and kids are out of town right now. They're coming back today. And we have a lot going on at our new house that we bought. And, we have this amazing spot on the river. But we had a lot of things happen. We had bats moving in the attic, our water system that pulls water out of the river, took a crap on us, and we have a lot going on. But here's the reason I'm even saying this. Okay. Cause I'm not the kind of guy, once again, that usually, says things are going wrong. The reason I want to put this out there is entrepreneurship's a roller coaster. Okay. If anyone ever thinks entrepreneurship is not a roller coaster, you're kidding yourself. I saw a graphic one time in a Facebook feed that basically says the day in the life of an entrepreneur. And this graphic had ups and downs all throughout the day. At the start of the day, they woke up, they wanted to conquer the world. And by 10 o'clock, you know, they're going, what's going on? And then throughout the day, it was these ups and downs. I think a lot of us can relate to that. But one thing that always brings me up, and fires me up and gets me in the right mindset is doing what I'm passionate about, doing things that really push forward toward my mission. Whenever I feel like I am dragging, whenever I feel like I need a boost, I usually look back, and it's because I'm not working on things that are pushing forward toward my mission. I love amplifying leaders. I love growing this organization we have growing here at Carrot with amazing leaders, with amazing mission going out there and amplifying you guys, amplifying our customers so you can make your bigger difference. That fires me up. So already in this first 2 minutes, 8 seconds of talking, I've started to get out of that little funk. I got in this afternoon, kind of the pre-afternoon funk, and I'm crazy excited about this podcast, this CarrotCast episode that you're about to listen to. And this episode with a good friend of mine, name is Carlos Vaz. Carlos and I first connected back in, I think it was 2009 or 10, through a mutual friend of ours, Brad Costanzo. And if you guys love marketing, you guys need to check out Brad's podcast. It's called Bacon Wrapped Business. Go check it out. It's an amazing podcast, amazing guests. And Brad is just a super connector. But Carlos, when I first met him, he was just getting through his first year as a big time multifamily investor. And as you guys are going to hear in this podcast, he started out with nothing other than a little bit of an experience in single family stuff, flipping some houses with the company he was working with, and the desire and tenacity to make his dreams come true. He set a huge goal. He'd never bought one multifamily property or apartment in his life. And he set a goal to acquire 2,000 units over a very short period of time. I think it was 2 years, 1 or 2 years. Okay. And he hit the goal. And now, guys and gals, he's acquired over 4,000 units. They currently own, I don't remember, he says it in this podcast, but they currently own well over 3,000 units in Texas, all around Dallas, San Antonio, you know, all around Texas. And they're crushing it. Okay. Now this is big time investing here. And I hope you guys really, as you guys are diving in, it gives you guys some massive mindset shifts on thinking bigger. Okay. Cause there's nothing about Carlos that makes him anything, you know, more special than you or I, as far as, the ability to go out there and build the type of business he's built. Okay. He's got focused. He had a long-term plan. Like you mentioned, he shot for the stars. And he's crushing it in a big way, to the tune of well over $100 million. I think it might be $400 million in portfolio size now in just about 8 years. That's crazy. Okay. So things you're going to learn on this podcast. First of all, you're going to learn how he went out and discovered the market he wanted to tackle, because he did not live in Dallas. He lived up in Boston. He's actually an immigrant from Brazil. So how did he identify the market? What research did he do? What did he look for? Once he got to the market, how did he build those relationships? How did he get banks? How did he get brokers to work with him when he'd never done a deal before? He's some new guy walking in town with an accent, and he's saying, hey, I'm looking to buy a 200-unit property. never done it. How did he do that? He's going to tell you guys exactly how he did it. And then how does he look at his properties? How does he analyze those properties? What does he look for? What are the points that catch him up sometimes in transactions where you could really lose your ass if you don't look out for these things? He's going to walk you through that. And in the end, he has a lot of amazing mindset shifts. You're going to learn what his mission is, what his purpose is in life toward the end of the call. And I think you're going to really, really, really enjoy this episode of the Carrot Cast with Carlos Vaz. If you have not subscribed to the CarrotCast yet, head over to CarrotCast.com and you can find our past episodes. You can also find the link to iTunes, where you should definitely subscribe on iTunes, guys and gals. We actually roll out our podcasts on iTunes about 2 weeks before we ever email them out to our email list, about 2 weeks before we ever put them on our blog. So you get a jump start, 2 week jump start. Also, guys and gals, if you're listening to this on the podcast version versus the video version, we always add in these extra tidbits on the front and back of the podcast versions that the video version does not get. And if you're getting a lot out of these podcasts, if you seem like you're getting good value, if you really love the guests we're bringing on, my take on this world, please give us a rating and review and subscribe. Those are the things that really get us up there in the rankings, that spread our message to more people, and I would really appreciate it a ton. That's the way that you can pay me back, pay us back for this value that we're hopefully bringing you. Okay. If you have not checked out our episodes before this, we have some amazing episodes. One of my favorites so far is with one of our clients, Martin Bonesire. If you want to learn how Martin is in a crazy competitive market, he's making lower offers than his competitors. Oftentimes he's the lowest of three or four offers that comes in, but he's closing the deals. He's getting the deal with the lowest offer. How is he doing that? Well, in that episode of the Carrot Cast, which you can find at CarrotCast.com, or go to iTunes and look us up on Carrot Cast, look for the Martin Bonesire one. He's a former Olympian turned house flipper doing 10 plus deals a month, oftentimes closing deals, making offers that are lower because of one very specific, simple, but crazy effective thing he's doing. Check that out. On future episodes of the Carrot Cast, we also have some amazing guests that you're going to be finding that hopefully you're going to be getting a lot out of. One last one you should definitely check out, guys and gals, a mentor of mine and also one of my favorite authors, Mike McCallowicz, the author of The Pumpkin Plan and Profit First. I got him on a past episode of the Carrot Cast, and that's going to help you trim a lot of crap out of your life. Things that drag you down. When you get to the end of the week and you go, oh my gosh, I worked on so much stuff, but you have no energy. What are those things you need to get out of your life, out of your business, so you have high energy, so you're crushing it in your businesses, so you're not stretched thin? Well, Mike is going to dive into that in that episode of the Carrot Cast. So guys and gals, strap in, get ready for this episode with Carlos Vaz, and here we go. I'm really, really, really excited about this episode. For a few reasons. I'm going to explain it to you here in a second. But Carlos and I go back a few years. And I was trying to really think back when the first time that we connected was. But it was from a mutual friend of ours, Brad, who if you guys want to learn marketing stuff, Brad is like your guy. You guys need to go check out his podcast. It's called Bacon Wrapped Business. And go check it out on iTunes, guys. Amazing guests, amazing stuff. But Brad is our connection. And Brad and Carlos both lived in Dallas, which you're still in Dallas, right, Carlos?
Yes, Dallas is home.
Yep. So Dallas is home for Carlos now. I know Brad has since moved over to San Diego, but we still have this great connection. And over the years, I've worked with Carlos on some things, and it's been really cool just seeing his journey, from the outside in. On how he started, and we're going to be going into his startup story here in a bit. But also, the thing that I'm the most interested in diving into is I love people who think big. I love people who want to go out there and make an impact, who want to make it happen, as Carlos's company's slogan is. And but do it in the right way, because there's a lot of people going out there and doing big things in the wrong way. And I think if you tackle it the right way, you want to make an impact, a positive impact. You want to build a lasting legacy. You want to do something big because, while you're here, what's the use of dealing small? And Carlos is doing things in a big way. And I think a lot of you guys, when we dive into some of this, you guys are going to go, what the heck? Those numbers, it's crazy stuff. But he started exactly where all of us started at one point, and he just went through some steps to amass a multifamily portfolio that we're going to dive into. So, Carlos, without further ado, man, welcome on the call, and I appreciate you taking out the time from your busy schedule to hop on.
Well, thank you very much, Trevor. I mean, you're a great guy yourself. I mean, we have known each other for a long time, and I'd like to thank you for putting this together and the opportunity to talk to, I mean, your listeners, and hopefully I can add some value.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you will, and I'm gonna start here, which is kind of a weird place to start, but sure. I'm gonna start here because this is gonna show people that we're kind of talking in a different league here. So you set out a goal way back when. You can tell the Cliff Notes version of the story, but you set out a goal way back when before you'd acquired any multifamily properties.
Yeah.
I think the goal was acquire 2,000 units in 2 years or something that sounded crazy for the average human being.
Yes.
And how did you do? Tell people how you did with that and where you are now with your company, Conti.
Very crazy. I think everything we do in life is a matter of focus. I mean, focus and have process and systems and stand up for our values. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to have your ups and downs and you're going to be challenged. If I go back to my first year in real estate, and I did about 7 projects, 1,400 units on my own. Mm-hmm. And then not counting those 7 projects, if I look outside of Conti, I've done another 4,000 units. So probably I've been involved almost close to $500 million in transactions. Mm-hmm. Our portfolio today, we own 3,500 units. We sold some properties. So I have all the best properties that we have. Mm-hmm. And then just more long-term mentality. Portfolio today is about, give or take, $400 million. We already raised about $100 million of equity.
Okay.
In all this time. We never had a loss in any of our investments. So going back to what you say, it's not just going big, but making sure that we have a plan, we have a people, we have systems. It's all about systems in place. Yeah. And our distributions are our Q1 distributions for investors was 9.7. Mm-hmm. So pay on time and doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
I think that's... And we do have a 1 year, 3 year, and a 10 year plan, mm-hmm. And that the difference, it goes from M to a B. So,
I love it, man. And like I said, I was thinking back to the first time that we met, and I think we actually met. Dude, this might be the only time we've actually met in person was up in Denver when you
yes.
were gracious uh-huh. enough to fly up there and help us out with something, which was awesome. But even at that time when it was around 2,500, maybe 3,000 units around there that you'd been involved in, but maybe a little bit less, 2,000. It was a lot either way.
Yeah.
It was just really cool helping to challenge myself on how big or how small that I was thinking. Cause I've heard this quote a lot of times from people that it takes the same amount of effort to do I'm going to use a deal in this example, but it takes the same amount mm-hmm. of effort to do a $1 million deal versus a $100,000 deal, as an example. And there's a lot of ways that relates to real life and business. It takes the same mm-hmm. amount of effort to do this versus that. And oftentimes we choose that. Oftentimes we choose the thing that is shooting lower because almost like we don't want to disappoint ourselves. Is there anything that as you were getting started that pushed yourself to set the goal big? Did you ever go, let's do 500? Or you set the goal 2,000 and you're like, let me back off on that a little bit. So, did you ever do that? And if what do you do to think big?
It's interesting. I think that's a thing. And to complete what you just said is not, of course, it takes the same, people said the same amount of effort to close a $100,000 deal or a $2 million deal. At the same level, the way you behave with 5,000 should not be different the way you behave with 5 million. Mm-hmm. It's very important. I mean, that discipline, the integrity. Now, in terms of thinking big, it's what you want to accomplish. And depends on the size of your team and what you're trying to do. In our case, I mean, I'm very focused and I see the opportunities are there, but all depends on how fast you want to move. So just to keep things in perspective, like this year alone has been pretty much our best year. In terms of deals that we hit, just doing the underwriting, just to see the capacity, the numbers we're working with.
Yeah.
So this deal as of, because we meet every Tuesday for leadership team, I can tell exactly how many deals you're looking. Mm-hmm. This year alone, just inside of the FW alone, I look at 137 projects. Mm-hmm. That's about 34,000 units.
Okay.
That's a little bit shy of $3 billion mm-hmm. worth of properties. And we have our 30 deal on the contract.
Gotcha.
So we look at a lot of deals. So it's so in order to me is, you should always try to push yourself big, right? There's a saying that, aim at the moon, because if you miss, you're going to be among the stars.
Yep.
It's, if you're going to do something, if you're able to push yourselves, push. That's my nature. I'm going to try to push myself. I'm in the max I can.
Mm-hmm. So people listen to this on the podcast version. You can definitely hear an accent, and I know you're from Brazil, right?
Uh-huh. Born in Brazil.
So first of all, elephant in the room, it's Olympic season right now. Olympics are in Brazil.
Yes.
Do you have family that are down there enjoying the Olympics? Did you have a chance to shoot down there at all? It looks like it's been an amazing games.
It has been an amazing games. And actually, I was there for business because now I have some investors coming from Brazil.
Okay.
Of all the crazy things happening there. My family's, everybody's there in Brazil. So I'm the only one in the US.
Yeah. That's cool. So you moved to the States and kind of piecing the background together for people.
Oh, sure.
But then I want to dive into the real estate stuff.
Sure. My story kind of straightforward. Extremely thankful for this country. And to me, on my book, this country is always going to be the best country in the world, period. I'm one of nine kids. I'm number eight of nine. My dad was a butcher. My mom, a homemaker, was born and raised there in Brazil. As far as I can remember, at the age of seven, I was at work with my dad. He would come and knock at the door at 4 a.m., and that's it. Mm-hmm. He's not going to knock twice. He comes back and someone's going to have it. So as long as not me, it's my younger brother, I'm fine. Yeah. So it's just, you go to work and it's a different way of being raised, but I'm very thankful for, didn't have much, but very thankful for having family and staying together. The first one of my brothers to finish high school, then and also going to college. Started going to college in Brazil. I did 2 years of college, going to law. But it's a federal university. They're always going on strike. So the first year had a strike for about 4 months.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. The second year, not a strike for about 2 months. At this point, I said, okay, this is getting out of control. I'll see if I can get an internship abroad. That story, I got an internship in Boston. I had a phone interview with them, and they sent me 50 questions. We're talking. And said, Carlos, I'd like to have you over. Mm-hmm. It's great going to Boston, work as an intern, but an intern, you don't get paid.
Yep.
So how am I going to make the ends meet? And if I need money, I'm like everybody else in my family. We all need money. So ended up going to Boston about 15 years ago. My first job actually was at newspaper warehouse from 2 a.m. to 6, load and unload trucks.
Okay.
Then going to the law office from 8 to 3. I also got a job at TGI Fridays in Woburn, Massachusetts, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and going to school during the night. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty much not much time to have fun and enjoy, just working, working, working. And the idea that we still have that with me today, that always learning.
Yep.
I think that perhaps that's one of our core values, pursue growth and learning. Mm-hmm. So always learning. And on that story, kind of doing construction, then I end up doing construction later from doing some labor work, and then assistant carpenter, then start doing all that. And that was the first Conti was created. The name of my company is named after my mom.
Okay.
So it's very simple. So the first one was created. So doing some jobs. Then I started working part-time as a loan officer. So I learned about the business. And in 2005, I ended up buying my first house. With a lot of the people listening now, you're buying homes, you're flipping. Yes, I've been there. From early 2005 to early 2007, I did about 30 houses in the greater Boston area, more blue-collar neighborhoods, and buying, doing all the work, working 7 days a week, doing everything ourselves. Kind of very, very involved. Not much of a team. And then until come 2007, I think what saved me in 2007 was the fact that I was involved. I was a loan officer. So I'm seeing kind of how the banks are behaving. That's number one. It was a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. Number two, the fact that everyone in Boston is trying to do the same, buy a house, flip it and sell it. And number three, Boston is not growing. I mean, if you look at 2007, there's no jobs actually being created. It's not like we look at Dallas today. I can show a report. These are the X companies moving to Dallas. Mm-hmm. There was nothing happening. So too much speculation. I'm going to stay here now and stay put. With that story, I went to met some people about multifamily. I want to get my CCIM education, which if, for all you guys listening, I think CCIM is a great organization. Mm-hmm. It stands for Certified Commercial Investment Member. It's a course that anyone can take it. You learn about commercial real estate. You're going to learn about multifamily, industrial, office, retail, highest and best use. Mm-hmm. I think then after that, in June of 2007, was just look at some demographics, place that were growing fast in the U.S. And then I had the North Carolina and Texas. Yeah. I spent about a week in North Carolina, South Carolina. And then I came to Dallas in August of 2007.
Yeah. And I remember, man, I remember when we were talking in Denver and you, I can't remember if you actually showed me the binders or you talked about them, but you had done all this research and you had these three ring binders on each market you mentioned. And then after really going through and seeing what each area was going to be doing, you chose Dallas.
Yes.
Dude, so what kinds of things were you looking for? I know, of course, job creation, business is moving in there, but what kinds of things were you looking for that keyed you in on Dallas is it? And for you, North Carolina wasn't, even though North Carolina has a lot of businesses moving there mm-hmm. as well. What were the differentiating factors?
If I look at back then, it was a little bit the demographic trend. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was looking not the short term. I was looking 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
What's the how big the economy was and how the state was growing. So even in 2007, if you were to compare Texas, North Carolina, I mean, the economies are, I mean, is what it is.
Yeah.
So Texas is, I mean, it's just behind, pretty much is behind California mm-hmm. in terms of the economy. So that one was important to me. I think that the cost of living was important to me, mm-hmm. Not only for myself, but for the business coming to the area. If you look at also, if you're trying to project a state that you don't have state income taxes,
yep.
Texas does not have. Yeah. So it's just putting yourself in a position that this place is going to be attractive for about 80% of the population.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So the one was look at that one and the position of Dallas. If you look at Texas in general and look at Dallas and DFW Airport, DFW Airport is a powerhouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a, in terms of cargo, is the busiest airport in the U.S. and pretty much the busiest one of the world, just cargo alone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very central location. It's very easy to go anywhere. So those are the kind of things I'm looking at one and said, just check, check, check. And then there's a lot of things that it's worth. So I came to Dallas and talking to people and everything else. There's a difference if you're putting an investor hat, and in my case was not only investor hat, but a place I want to call home.
Yep.
And to me, Dallas, Texas in general. If the idea that if you want to build something, if you want to do it, you can do it. It's very open.
Man, so one thing I want to kind of key in on, and you mentioned that you weren't just looking in the today, you're looking 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years out plus. And now you're at about that spot now where, you know, 2008, you know, we're 8 years removed from 2008. So we're starting to hit some of that time period now. And what I want people that are listening to this to key in on is I think way too many people look at things on the short term. They look at things this year, this summer, next year, 2 years out, which those are great things to know. Like if you can be decently certain yes. how things are going to be in the next couple of years, that's great. But like Carlos is mentioning, we need to have that 1, 5, 10, 20 year plan, possibly at least a rough guess of it. So did you guys think that far out? Were you like 20 years, 30 years, maybe not a full plan on it, but you're thinking that far out, or was mm-hmm. it 7, 8, 9, 10 enough for you?
Well, I can tell you for sure that we as a company, we have a 1, 3, and 10 year plan.
Mm-hmm.
I have exactly 10 year plans. And I can tell you specifics how the company is going to look 10 years from now.
Yep.
I can tell you the size of our portfolio, the amount of employees, what we're going to be doing, charities are going to be working. I can tell in details. We will have a coach. We'll meet actually Brad Costanza is our friend in common.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Brad. He ended up interviewing my coach,
okay.
Mark Winters. We have a system that we follow, the EOS,
mm-hmm.
Entrepreneur entrepreneur operating system.
Yep.
Have been using for a little bit over 2 years. So we know exactly. So, but now your point, Trevor, is really important. You're talking about single family, multifamily.
Yep.
The difference is try to picture multifamily as that speedboat. You go very fast. Mm-hmm. You can move from zero to 60 in 5 seconds. It takes you there very quickly. That you're flipping homes. Mm-hmm. You're flipping home. What do you think? You're thinking, well, next summer, this time, I'm able to sell all my inventory.
Yep.
Or on the winter's coming, maybe you want to buy more homes because the best time for me to buy a house were in the winter time. Mm-hmm. So nobody's looking. I'm coming heavily buying. So you have a lot of the season you can look. And usually for the single family home, it's about a 1 year.
Yep.
Maybe it's a little bit longer, so you don't pay the short term capital gains, but it's usually it's that 1 year and a half. And I remember when I was flipping home, everything's by the week. If I'm able to save a week flipping the house, that's how I put profit in my pocket.
Yep.
A week can cost my profit.
Yep.
So your mindset is very different, and you have a tendency because many times the house that you're holding is not, even if you have it rented, is not able to pay that mortgage itself. Mm-hmm. So, and you don't want to get in the landlord business and you have 50 homes, 100 homes, because it becomes a nightmare. Mm-hmm. You have different levels of flippers. You have their flipper that's flipping house all the time, the flipper that has a certain portfolio, maybe have 50 homes, and the flipper that's getting to the 100 homes or so in their portfolio. And that's a different business.
Yep.
Because they get involved now on the management side.
Yep, exactly.
Looks like flipping homes. It smells like flipping homes. It's not flipping homes.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're getting the management. It's a different. When you look at multifamily, we're not a speedboat. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to go to 100, to 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's going to take us 0 to 60 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while. But it's like, but once you get there, you get momentum. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to go. So that's why kind of the multifamily side, every deal we look at is about a five year, just the holding time.
Okay.
But once you get the momentum, it goes. Mm-hmm. It starts moving. So our best performing deals are deals that we have done in, 2008, 2009. That they're very, very stable. We did a couple of refinances, and the cash flow is well above 15. Mm-hmm. So it's and the other thing that's important, your mindset shift from, I need to sell, and that, why do you want to sell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if it's performing for you, you're either going to take that cash and put it somewhere else and go up,
yeah,
or keep it where it's at. And just, like you said, let the cash flow kind of be that snowball for you. So, I want to kind of unpack some deal specific stuff. And one of the reasons,
sure,
because it's selfish reasons where, I want to dive back into buying multifamily again. Now,
okay,
I don't have aspirations for having 4,000 units, but I do have aspirations for really adding to my portfolio. And I think a lot of the people, mm-hmm, on this call will as well. And, I've got my active income businesses, consulting side. I've got Carrot, of course, and some other stuff.
Sure.
And I want to start better utilizing the cash I've got and just, building for long-term wealth. And as you're going out there and looking at multifamily now, of course, your focus, are you still 100 units and above, or have you guys went up even higher as far as the types of
properties? Usually we look at 150. The way we look at 150 and above and below 500.
Okay. And so for you guys, which you guys are definitely at a different level, is there certain economies of scale that you're getting at 150 and above?
Yes, that's the point.
Okay.
What's very interesting about multifamily, many times the guy that's flipping homes, you're going to say, I'm flipping home. Maybe my first deal should be a 50 units. Mm-hmm. I advise you, if you can, don't do the 50 units. Try to go to the 150 or 200.
Okay.
Economy of scales. Mm-hmm. What's very different from the flipping home side and the multifamily side, flipping homes, it's one house that you're selling all the time. The multifamily is that how the property can sustain itself.
Yep. Yep.
When you start to go below that 150, it makes a little bit more challenge. Mm-hmm. Below the 100, it becomes very, very challenge because the property has to pay for that property manager, a lead maintenance person. Mm-hmm. So the property has to support itself.
Yeah.
So if you have two few units, it becomes harder.
Gotcha. So the 150 is kind of the floor that you guys
focus yes.
on, and, uh-huh. and just the numbers say anyway, that this should be the floor for a lot of us. So if we're going out there looking for 150 unit building, let's say,
yes.
Are you guys coming in with, I guess, let me reverse. When you guys did your first few, were you guys coming in with a bunch of your own cash, partners, bank, a commingle of uh-huh. sources? Kind of how did you guys fund those deals? Because that's probably the biggest thing that people are thinking about. Oh my gosh, a 50 unit might be, I'm just making numbers up, but a 50 unit might be 1.5 million. But man, if I look at 150, I'm talking at 8 million. You know, so they're trying to span this gap on how
yes.
they're going to buy it. So
and how are we going to do that one? And yeah. okay, so a couple of ways to, there's so many ways, there's so many things, so many good things to talk and, yeah. and trying to share. To make sure that, I mean, your listeners are getting a lot of value.
Totally.
Let me see here. So, first thing first, it's if you're looking to buy this, you go from I'm going to 3 million. Now I'm going to go to 8 million, like you said. Mm-hmm. You need to break that mindset. And this is multifamily. This is not single family homes.
Yep.
Very different. Because many times your mindset, and I'm guilty of that. In the beginning, I used to do that one. Well, I'm buying a house and this house is $200,000, but I'm going to buy this multifamily. It's only $50,000 a unit. Wow, that's a steal.
Yeah.
No, you're comparing apples to coconuts.
Yeah.
Very different. There's not, you need to apples to apples. So you need to compare apples to apples. So what's multifamily to multifamily? Now, when I move to Dallas, first of all, why should I give you a deal? If I'm a broker and we just met,
yep.
why you?
Yep.
So first of all, you need to overcome the credibility. So you're gonna get some pushback. And doesn't matter for you listeners, you get in there and I'm like, but I've done 1,000 units, 1,000 single-family homes. How hard is it going to be for me to get in a multifamily? Mm. It's a different industry altogether. So you need to, what I did when I came to Dallas, that I have a one-page summary and said, listen, these are some of the deals. This is what I have done. And now I'm looking to multifamily. Mm-hmm. So, and who are the brokerage house? I can tell you today, which is different, exactly how many brokerage houses we have in Dallas, who are the brokers, where they stand, and I can tell you. And I want to make sure that I'm always among the first three callers that they're going to make. That's my job.
Yeah.
But then you're going to meet who are your players, who are your brokers in town. And brokers, sometimes people say, well, you need to work with brokers. Brokers are good people. Mm-hmm. Many of these brokers have been in the industry for 20 plus years. Take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So, and don't look at that one. And the whole idea always has to be off-market deal. Honestly, who cares? Mm-hmm. The deal has to give you a return.
Yep.
If the deal is in the market or off-market, if you get your return, if you say, I want to get a 7% return, who cares if it's in the market or not?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are so focused and it has to be off market.
Yeah.
So let's put that aside. So now you have your own page. You're going to go out there and say, so the other thing that you need to start doing now, not only talking to the brokers, you need to see who are the management companies.
Okay.
It's very important for you because once you get into the multifamily, it's not your capacity. It's your team capacity,
yeah.
and you're going to need a management company. Most likely, of course, you don't have your management company out of the get-go. Mm-hmm. So today you have your own management company. In the past you didn't have. You're going to have to partner.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, if you think about buying 150 units, who are the local players in your market? Which market you want to buy? Let's say trying to find 4 or 5 local kind of management companies.
Mm-hmm.
How many units do they have? Let's say if you have a property like Graystar has over 300,000 units in a management.
Okay.
And you're going to buy your 150. You're not going to even be a pebble for them.
Yep.
So does it make sense to have, if you're going to hunt for a bird, you're not going to bring a gun to hit an elephant. So who are the management companies you're going to be talking in your market? So you should be looking, let's say, I would look for 4 or 5 management companies that are management. They're managing anywhere between 5 to maybe 10, less than 10,000 units.
Okay.
And always, What about the track record? Mm-hmm. I always ask for references. Ask for 3 references at minimum.
Okay.
And talk to these people and get it. Someone has been working for them for the last 5 months. Someone has been with them for 2 years. And someone has been with them for more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, John, this is Trevor. I'm thinking about buying this property. And I heard from this management company, what's the experience? How is that working for these guys? Because remember, when you're going to go to a bank, you're going to get a loan with multifamily. You're also going to have a management company has to sign on that loan.
Gotcha.
Not as a guarantor, but to show to the bank that you have a professional management team with you. Hmm. Otherwise, you cannot even get your loan.
That's fascinating. So that's something I didn't know. So guys and gals, take note of that and don't start looking for the management company after you found the property. Like, go out there, like
yes.
Carlos is saying, and build that team around you and start vetting those companies. So, and share, dude, what I'm going to throw you some questions. If you don't feel comfortable answering any,
not at all.
Hey, so a question. So, I know pretty much what a management company will charge for a unit, 10, 20 units, whatever. Once you get up to 150 units for a property, what does that kind of look usually? I know Dallas, it might be different than Oregon or whatever, but are you in the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%? Is it higher? Is it lower? Like, where is it?
I think it's at a good point. Oregon might be different. I think it varies from place to place, but I would say expect anywhere between 3 to 5%.
Okay.
I mean, that's going to be, the gauge. Since you brought the management house, ourselves to charge 3%, but we don't do any third party. We only manage our own properties. Yep. It would be insane for us to do any third party. I'll be the first one not to do it.
Yeah.
So I would say 3 to 5%.
Okay.
Would be a good margin, and just to continue for people, listen to that. So now you have your one page to talk to the brokers. You have your interviewing your management companies. Who else are you gonna need? A good attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, trying to find a good real estate attorney, very different from a single family real estate attorney and the multifamily. They both are in real estate. They both do transactions. They're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
You need a real estate, someone with multifamily experience. Why? The contract, you have more detail.
Yeah.
You're talking about lease expirations. You're talking about contracts, like a cable contract that you have to assume or not. There's a lot of things that you need to find. So for the same reason, when you're talking to some of these real estate brokers in multifamily, ask them, hey, do you have 1 or 2 good real estate attorney that does multifamily you would recommend?
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And you're going to call these 3 or 5 real estate brokers. You're going to meet them for lunch. My first year, I paid a lot of free lunch. I pay a lot of lunch, breakfast, anyone. I'm going to pay because I want to talk to you. So go interview your attorneys. How much do they charge? What they have done? And the same thing, can I get at least 3 referrals?
Mm-hmm.
I want 3 people have three reference people we're working with. Can you give me at least 3 people and go talk to these people? Make sure that they have the right people talking to you.
Yep.
So now you check the legal. Let's talk about money, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the first side on the lender. Who are the lenders, right? As your first deal, as a matter of fact, if possible, in the first deal, try to partner with someone, even if you do the small amount possible,
mm-hmm.
so you can learn from how they're structuring things, how they're doing things before you do things by yourself.
Yeah.
There's that saying, if you think the education is expensive, try ignorance.
Oh, yeah.
I've tried my own, and it's very expensive. I'm telling you things that I would have done differently, yep. where I burned myself. So if some of the people don't burn themselves, that would be a good lesson. but let's say if you could be your partner of someone, but you want to do your deal on your own. Hmm. So who are these lenders? I would go back even to the same of the real estate brokers we're talking to. Hey, do you know some of the good lenders in this market? Remember, if you need to explain your market to your lender, why are you doing business with that lender?
Yep. Yep.
If I'm working for a lender in Oregon and I need to explain to them that why West Oregon is better than North Oregon, you have the wrong lender.
Yeah.
It sounds silly, but keep that in mind. You have to explain your market to your lender. Don't work with that lender. It's going to cost you money.
So on the flip side of that, if you have to explain the market to the lender and it is the right lender, you might be going after the wrong market. Right? So if you're a guy and hasn't researched your own market, you're saying, hey, Eastern Oregon is where it's at, and that lender's going, no, like I don't get it. So you might not have done your research on your own market, guys and gals. So
yes,
make sure you've done your research, you know it inside and out, you're crazy confident about it. And like Carlos said, when you're talking to the lenders, make sure that they don't have to be explained with that as well.
Yeah, then that's very important. Do your market research. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's if all the cities that have economic development, like the Dallas Economic Development has fantastic research. You can have an idea which areas of DFW is going which way. So the more you learn about your market, the more you turn yourself into an asset, mm-hmm. the more people want to listen to you, because you're just showing people respect. Yep. You're just showing respect that you know the business. So now, when you get these lenders, so another thing that's important, if your first deal, do you want to do a deal with a bridge loan and trying to get a Fannie Mae loan or trying to get a permanent loan? I would not recommend, because it's your first deal. There's so many moving parts. I would rather get something more stable, get a more stable loan. Mm-hmm. Just remember, like Warren Buffett said, right? Rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, listen to rule number one.
Yep.
I'm just sharing to you some things where you can lose money and maybe you don't go that route.
Mm-hmm.
So
so instead of a bridge loan, are banks lending on longer time periods for great properties?
You're able to find properties that you're able to get a Fannie Mae loan or a Freddie Mac loan. Mm-hmm. Like my last one that I did about 45 days ago, we lock a 10-year loan, amortize 30 years, 3.95.
Oh my gosh.
So fantastic.
That's crazy.
So really, really, and that one is almost a 10% cash on cash year one. So we're very happy on that project. But now, going back to your first deal, trying to find a deal that is more stable. Mm-hmm. Because when you start to look at rehab, renovation for multifamily, is another beast altogether. Mm-hmm. And that, I can go deep on that detail. I can even have another call just to talk about rehab in multifamily, because there's so many other things that you need to watch. Why you're going to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So just for you to get something more stable, you get to know who are the lenders. And the other thing that I'm trying to avoid your listeners, if they're trying to do something on their own, if you get something a bridge or something that's not stable, there's a chance they have to sign personal recourse.
Okay. Okay. So so your loans, are you mainly doing non-recourse then?
Always non-recourse.
Okay.
I don't do recourse anymore. At this stage, we don't have to.
Yep. Exactly.
So just for the lender, because what does it mean to our listeners? For those of you who don't know, recourse means that if you're getting a loan for $3 million, you're personally guaranteed that $3 million. Mm-hmm. Non-recourse means that if you're getting a loan for $3 million, I'm not personally guaranteeing the loan as long as I'm not doing something illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, just doing fraud or something, so they cannot come after myself. Mm-hmm. So which is standard. So I'm trying to avoid you. So let's go back. You look at a property, $8 million property. If the property is a little bit more stable, you're able to get maybe anywhere between 75% to 80% loan. Mm-hmm. So let's call it 8 million. So we're talking about maybe 1.6, call it 2 million equity that you need to bring.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what's important. Talk to that lender. Something that time and time again, nothing is better than transparency and understanding. Mm-hmm. So when you talk to your lender, just be open. When you talk to your lender, say, listen, this is my background. This is me travel. This is what I have done. This is my net worth. This is here. It's much easier to know that upfront as a lender. Mm. And how can I work with you?
Yep.
So, and when you talk to the lender, whenever possible, I don't know in the beginning how I can work with, making sure that you're talking to a person that's actually sitting on the board of that bank.
Gotcha.
Okay. A decision maker. Because sometimes you're talking to someone is an analyst that's going to put a business plan together, and during the board meeting, he needs to sell you to a board meeting.
Gotcha. Yep.
So it's makes a big difference to get a loan approved or not.
So with those people, so let's say someone walks into a big regional bank or national bank or whatever it is, are those people usually the first person you talk to when you're doing that, or do you keep on saying, hey, you know, who is the decision maker, and then you finally find that person?
Well, first of all, if you're talking to good real estate brokers, they're going to have more contact that's going to be better than just go to your local bank, like Bank of America, like Wells Fargo. Okay. We'll do all your banking to Wells Fargo, but we don't do any financial for Wells Fargo. It's a nightmare to work with, that's Wells Fargo.
Yeah,
so it's great for all the investors who have branches all over the country, but to do business with, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I would almost go to, could be some of your local banks, and I would talk to some of your real estate brokers because they know who are the banks are closing.
Okay.
And they have some, and the question is, how is a warm lead, right? Mm-hmm. So here I have myself showing up to a bank, right? Yep. Trying to get something. Here I have myself through a real estate agent that's going to call, hey, John, I have a friend of mine, Carlos, that's going to show up. Can you talk to him? Mm-hmm. You become a warm contact.
Yep.
So our job is, how can you make yourself warm all the time?
Gotcha.
So you can use that to your advantage. Mm-hmm. And even better if not only a real estate agent, but also the attorney that you have, they both know the same lender. Mm-hmm. So how warm things are getting now? So that's your job, to how to overcome.
I got it.
So challenge you're going to face.
And totally, if they're getting these warm connections from the broker, from the attorney, and they see that there's this great team that they've already worked with, they already respect surrounding you. So it makes it easier to move forward with it.
Uh-huh.
I like it. I guess, do you have anything else on the financing side? Because I've got a couple of questions on picking properties and stuff like that.
Okay, so the financial side, let me see, just to wrap this up.
Yeah.
So we're talking about this $2 million. The most important thing is going to be your due diligence. Mm-hmm. How you do your due diligence. I have over 100 points that we cover today in due diligence. So that's the where we get very anal and get a lot of detail. But that's the part that you need. You need to go deep to really verify, to make sure the property is what's worth. Mm-hmm. Then you put this loan in place. You need the $2 million. You can do a situation that you raise some money. In my case, I always have been raising money. Mm-hmm. This is my first deal to now. Yeah. Or a case that you're trying to buy the deal by yourself. Mm-hmm. Regardless if you're trying to raise money or do it by yourself, it's all about a very good due diligence. I believe that I have something that I wrote last year that I post on my LinkedIn profile. Might be something old already, but it gives a general idea, some of the steps to look at.
We'll dig it up. We'll put it in the show notes for this, which I love.
So. But that's over a year already, or maybe a year and a half, or 2 years. I don't know.
Well, it's better than nothing, man. So on the due diligence, I'm always curious. So what are some of the things that you remember from some of your deals that have popped up and derailed a deal at the last minute, where, man, it looked so great, and then this thing popped up and derailed it or made it bad? Or what are some of the really key things that you guys are like, man, these things really need to look for?
First of all, the due diligence. Okay, let's say you have one of your listeners flipping a lot of homes, mm-hmm. and you look at now you have a multifamily. Like I said, it's a different business altogether.
Yeah.
So in the part of the due diligence, you need to have a good management company. That management company is going to be key to help you to do your due diligence.
Okay.
So see, that's important. Multifamily is all about your team. It's not about yourself. A lot of the things in a single family, you can do by yourself. Mm-hmm. You have a couple of helpers. But multifamily, you need a lot of helpers. So that part of the due diligence is going to be that management company coming in. What's really important, unit walk. You must walk every single unit.
Okay.
But what are you going to be looking when you're walking? You're going to be looking at the electrical. You're going to be looking at the plumbing. I mean, you're going to be checking the HVAC. Mm. You're going to walk every single bedroom. So, what's the shape of those units? Mm-hmm. Because when you're buying the property and you're going to locate some money, should you allocate, let's say, $2,000 for repairs, for improve the units, or should it go to $6,000?
Gotcha.
So if there's one variable inside of multifamily that breaks the deal all the time, it's how money you allocated for unit turn. Mm-hmm. That's always the number one variable in multifamily renovation that goes all over the board. If you don't have a clear plan, you can lose a lot of money. So number one, walk all the units. Number two, what's as important, ask for at least your 3 months of not 3 years of financials.
Okay.
So, and in our case, we not only ask for the financials, but I also ask for bank statements, mm-hmm. because I want that financial to match that bank statement. Yeah. So what's the story? What's happening? So those are a couple of items. Then I can go deep. I can give you more details.
Oh, I'm sure you can. And I love having you on this call for a couple of
hours. Yes, we can be here for a long time.
like you said, maybe we have another call.
And I enjoy it, but it's fine.
No, I love it, man. And I know you have a dinner meeting after this later. So we'll put that part off till later. Because like I could totally dive into that in a big way. I want to kind of peel all the way back to the start. So as far as looking for deals and – I know at least back in the day when you were first getting started, you guys were looking for, and don't quote me on this, but you guys were looking for B and C properties around there, I think. And then, and then you guys were repositioning and strengthening them. So what do you feel is the best strategy? What do you guys do for what types of properties you're looking for? Okay. Are you looking for ones that are rough around the edges and need work? Are you looking for great condition? What are you guys looking for?
Okay, that's a good question, Trevor. So what life taught me is that my worst deal was my cheapest one.
Hmm. Okay.
So there's one deal that I bought for 20% of the note.
Oh, wow.
And I almost lost money. That was my worst deal.
Wow. Wow.
So it's very important. So the point is, it's all about the location. Mm-hmm. And something very important about the location, if the area is changing, you are part of the change.
Okay.
If the area is not changing, but you think that you're going to change and you have your flag up, I'm changing, you're going to die. Mm-hmm. So it's very different. So what we do today, I mean, and what it didn't do in the past and today, we're very peculiar about that. It's called the median household income. Mm-hmm. In a 3 mile range, it must be above 50,000.
Okay. Okay.
So that's my first rule today.
Yep.
You talk about A, B, C, and then what's the median household income, 3 mile range? Okay, above 50,000. Okay, let me listen to the story.
Okay.
Why I say this 50,000? 50,000, what I realized for almost 10 years in the business now, is almost a magic number. Mm-hmm. When you tell me, even in Portland, almost in the U.S. in general, when I see above 50,000, it means that I can close my eyes. I'm going to see some Starbucks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see some Walgreens. There's a chance I'm going to see Home Depot.
Yep.
So you're going to see those triple net retail that are going to do a massive market research. Mm-hmm. That's going to come in. They're going to sign a lease for 10 years or plus. They're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And they're going to become our neighbors.
Gotcha.
So that's really important. Remember our job, mitigate risk, don't lose money, don't lose money. And then it's how can you not lose money? So so that's why the 50,000, it's important.
Okay.
Now, when I look at type of properties, A, B, C, we always need to find the value. And there are two things that you can add value. You have the physical one, your value added, the physical side, that you get in the properties older. You're going to make some improvements. You just need to understand what type of improvements you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And I can talk to you a lot, exterior, interior, how we do them differently and why we do things the way we do.
Yep.
And the second value you can create is operationally. Who is doing the management? Mm-hmm. So today here in Dallas, when you look at a deal, if I know that certain management companies are managing, we know that there's value there.
Okay.
Out of their back, I say, okay, if they're the management companies, there's some value.
Gotcha.
Because okay.
What are some of the things that those management companies are doing wrong that are leaving money on the table?
Many times they're not pushing the rents they're supposed to push.
Okay.
There's more room on that rent. Mm-hmm. You can definitely bring the market up. Their expenses are too fat, mm-hmm. in terms of what they spend for unit turns. Management, sometimes a management fee about 5%,
okay.
what they're using for insurance. I mean, there's so many, many other things that we can see it that hey, we're able to save money.
Gotcha.
And that's on the kind of on the actual side. And then when you go to the property, just looking the way these people behave, mm-hmm. there's the people itself that more like, wow, So like there's a rule of thumb. Whenever I go to the property, I see a manager wearing that very, very nice tall high heels. Yeah, she's the first one I'm going to fire.
Yeah.
Because I know that she's not walking the properties. She's sitting in that office all day.
Yeah.
If you're wearing that very high heel, you just told me that I'm too comfortable in my chair.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Yes,
that's really write this stuff down, guys. This is stuff that's coming from, you know, someone who's been there, done that for the past decade, thousands of units. So awesome stuff. So you guys are looking at mainly how you can add value, how you can make it more profitable. And so for you guys are, am I correct in the statement that you guys aren't necessarily saying I'm just looking for B or C? It could be A as long as there's value to be added. And
it can.
Okay.
Usually ourselves today, we look at 1980s and up vintage.
Mm-hmm.
Can you look at, and if I look at our acquisition, we're going to split that in three pies. We have about 20% is going to be your class A. That typically was built in 2000 and newer vintage.
Mm-hmm.
70% is your class B. 1980s type vintage, older, that we can improve some value. And there's a 10% is that B, almost a B on the C side. There's a land play.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very hard to find. Those are the deals that we can still get the cash flow. But in a certain, the location is such a good location.
Yeah.
There's a chance we can tear it down and build something new.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. So that's even... But those are harder to find.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. What's the mix of your portfolio right now as far as...
Portfolio, we have two A's. Well, actually, I have another A under contract.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have 14 properties today. So then we have... I have but four, those the land play,
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic. And the remaining are all B's.
Okay. Man, this stuff is fascinating to me. Like I said, because running Carrot and doing the other stuff that we're doing really, really well. But at the same time, everything goes in phases and cycles. And one thing that I've learned is if you're not taking a hunk of your active cash flow and putting it into wealth building activities, the active cash flow can cut off someday. And if you haven't taken money and done smart things with it, you know, then you're back where you started. I want to make sure that all the listeners to this podcast, myself included, when we're building a business, we're doing it very intentionally to build something bigger, not just put money in our bank account that we're using to spend for, you know, cars and boats and whatever it is right now. And you guys are doing it in a big way. Man, there's so many questions I have, but so on the sourcing properties, so you guys mm-hmm. are working with, you guys are working with brokers. Is there any other spot that is kind of a really good source of properties that has been working for you guys that you'd like to share?
No, I mean, brokers, I mean, I think it's very important to know who they are. And I mean, you just spend a lot of time with them. Some sellers as well. Every seller that I do business with, I want to get to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, listen, this is who I am. This is what I've done. If you ever have something new, please let me know.
Yeah.
And I make an effort at least once a year to touch them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that effort. Hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. So it's always a way to find kind of off-market deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good way. Even my lender the other day, the one who brought us the deal was my lender.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they say, Carlos, we closed this deal with you. It was good. And I have another borrower. They're struggling with this property. They were talking to me, and you guys want to take a look.
Mm.
I say, sure. End up closing the deal completely off market, no broker, nothing. And at our, at the return, better than expected.
Gotcha.
So, of course, my lender did the loan, but it was good for them. So it's, so those type of, and the people we're dealing with, because remember, those people are touching. I mean, you're not only your real estate brokers, your real estate attorneys,
mm-hmm.
they know other people and say, listen, hey John, hey, you know, I've been working out for some time, and if some of our clients are thinking about selling, no, there's just one page, it doesn't hurt anything. You're going to have insurance companies, because for multifamily, you're going to have your own insurance, right?
Yep.
So when you want to talk to an insurance agent, the same thing. Hey John, my insurance agent, hey, I'm doing this here. If you know of someone, please let me know. We're trying to build a portfolio bigger, and management companies, like your own management company that you're working with, that could be another source.
Gotcha. And I love it, man. So I'm taking mental notes. I'm going to go back through the recording here. Cause like I said, I'm in a phase right now where we are getting really serious about diving back in and buying multifamily. And, there's all these questions that keep popping up in my mind going, okay, you know, as we really dive in and do this, here's something to think about. One thing that I've been thinking about, cause I've been in small multifamily and as you scale up, I honestly just haven't had, I haven't had the experience in 50, 100, 150, 200 unit, property. So let's say you close 150 unit property.
Okay.
What are you guys doing for reserves as far as it's a $5 million property, 150 units? How much in reserves? Is there a percentage you guys keep back in reserves?
It varies so much.
Yeah.
It varies from deal to deal. I mean, that's the point that, that's where experience and have our, I mean, having the right people with you, because first of all, if you're looking, you're going to have two types of reserves. You're going to have your renovation itself. You do have something that the lenders are going to do reserve, what's called CapEx, capital expenses that you're supposed to spend every year.
Okay.
And that varies from deal to deal. You're going to have an old property and a newer property can be something about $250 per unit.
Mm-hmm.
And older properties, you might 300, 350, even 400. It depends. And also depends on the type of loan you're getting. That's a different point. But now, if you look at kind of the reserves as far as an improvements. So what type of improvements are you trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're buying a B property, the best example is one deal that we're looking right now. We actually just got the contract on this one. So it's in a blue collar area. I like it a lot. I have two other properties next to this one. And I went to tour the property with my acquisition manager. We were talking back and forth. And then I told the president of my management division to go there walk as well. So we got to a point that in terms of the reserves just for unit upgrades. So we saw that's a very blue-collar neighborhood, very stable. I mean, it's nothing fancy is being built, but it's very stable.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming along. So we realized that if you were to spend the money replacing appliances, going from white or going to black or stainless, or if we were to put or a granite countertop, this money is just being wasted.
Yep.
The tenant, it's not what I want, what my team wants, but what the market's telling us.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple. It's about market. Mm-hmm. Economics 101, supply, demand, what the market's telling you.
Mm-hmm.
So the market's telling us that if you go ahead and spend the money for granted, I mean, we're just wasting that money. Nobody's going to pay.
Yeah.
If you go ahead and replace those appliances and put a black appliance or stainless, people are indifferent. Mm-hmm. They're not going to pay. So we got to a point that typically what we spend, our typical unit turn is about $4,500, $5,000 per unit.
Okay.
This property is costing us $2,000 per unit.
Oh, wow. Okay. Gotcha.
Because it's the tenant profile.
Yep.
But but we still have the same business plan. And every decision that you make, it's not because you're trying to – it's every decision that you make, it has to be aligned with the whole business plan for the investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for that year. If it's a five-year hold, why you want to make those decisions?
Gotcha.
Dude, so,
this is really good stuff. And like I could go on with a bunch more questions on like selling the properties and this and that, but I want to respect your time and also everyone listening to the podcast. Hopefully you guys have some amazing nuggets. If you're looking at going into multifamily, the stuff that Carlos is laying down here is amazing. And one of the biggest things that it's one of the simplest, but also one of the biggest things that Carlos mentioned on here is go out there and build that team, because that team is going to help get you the foot in the door to those lenders, to those deals sometimes, and also make things a lot easier. So that's the first thing, to go out there, guys and gals, and build that team. Nail that part of it, and it everything else is going to get easier. Now, Carlos, I've got to ask this question. So when we first met, several years back, and you had the big goal of building 2,000 units and getting up to 3, and now you're way beyond that stuff. You guys have done amazing things, have been written about in pretty much all the multifamily magazines. I've been seeing you guys pop up and all those things. And you guys are in a really, really good spot in your company. What's next for you? What's next for you guys as a company, but also, is there a next for Carlos after multifamily? Are you just so focused in on multifamily, it's like, this is all I can think about for now, the next 10, 15 years? Or is there a bigger end game that multifamily is going to help you get to?
I think that the more I learn about multifamily, the more I love it.
Yeah.
I love my business. I mean, it's unbelievable. And the more I learn about multifamily, the more I want to focus on one thing. So it's more like it's a very, very focused. I think that right now, which is interesting from the time we met today, I think today we're in the best time ever.
Mm-hmm.
Best time ever because, I mean, granted, our average occupancy is above 95% in the whole portfolio. The portfolio is very, very strong, very thankful for it. But our team,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've never been so proud of the team that I have. So it's not the decision that I make, it's the decision that we make as a team.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of when I look at what makes me really, really proud is the process behind everything we do.
Yeah.
So about for us, process, execution, and the company culture that keep us together, our core values, that everything that that's.
Speaking of core values, dude, if you can spin your computer, I saw your core values behind you earlier.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's see. There they are. We're huge at core values here at Karen's. It's the way we run the business. And I am way interested to see your guys'. So for those of you listening to the podcast, we actually have the video version of this on our website. Just go to carrotcast.com and you guys can see the video version. But Carlos moved his computer around in his office or boardroom, and we've got the core values there. So the Conti core values are integrity, do the right thing, excellence, go above and beyond, make a difference, make a positive impact on people around you, be passionate, love what you do and why you do it. Pursue growth and learning. Be humble and realize there's always room to improve. And I love those, man. A lot of ours kind of are very similar. We've got one constant, never-ending incremental improvement. Man, I love it. So what one of those core values fires you up the most if you had to pick one?
I think that pursue growth and learning.
Yep.
I mean, I always... people in the office, my wife, and I always joke, you're always learning. Last year I got accepted. Harvard Business School has almost an MBA program type for CEOs called OPM.
Okay.
I got accepted, so I'm doing that one. So I had my first year is a 3-year program. So this year I'm going to go to my second. It has been a game changer.
Cool.
How pushing myself out of my comfort zone. So how open my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to the your question, I think that's really important. What's next, right? I think that we're in the best time ever now in terms of process. I mean, how we look at deals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I look at this year alone, we look at 137 deals.
Yeah,
that's pretty much our capacity. I don't think the last 2 years. We not even got close to that.
Oh, wow.
So that's a function of how the systems, the process are coming together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unbelievable. And what's interesting about multifamily, it's that the problem about passive income, they get addictive.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, this is working and it's working well. Oh, it's coming every month like a clock and next month. And then how can I make this a little bit bigger? And you never touch that cow, leave the cow there, forget it, get the milk every day. So I think that has been... very thankful to the way the company has been able to impact my life and mm-hmm. my family. I think the next is taking the company to grow us. We're thinking now in the next 3 years, probably going to be how to take us now to 7,000 units that we're heading to. But the most important thing, not the size of the company, it's the impact that we're going to do.
Yep.
We're working with 3 charities here in Dallas, Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
We're very close to them. There's the Momentous Institute that works is a school for in a poor area of Dallas. They do an amazing job. And the other one is called Paper for Water.
Mm-hmm.
That actually this week we just finished our first well ourselves in Kenya. Yeah. And the impact of that stuff, that's the stuff that keeps me very, very excited.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond Conti. Beyond something that makes us to grow, to make stronger, to give it back. Because
mm-hmm.
myself, personally, as you know, was not born here.
Yep.
So I have a debt to this country to give it back, to make Dallas, to make this country better.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So, and I think that I'm the beginning of my journey.
Yep.
So the more my company grow, that journey of giving back and trying to make my place around me better is just the beginning. So that's the next chapter. the next chapter is taking us to the next level and work on the on more foundations and have a positive impact, make a difference, work our values.
Man, so this right here, and this is a perfect way to end this episode of the Carrot Cast, guys and gals. One of the things I love the most is when I'm talking to leaders, talking to entrepreneurs, and you see them light up. Like, you know when you can visually see them light up, or you can hear it. Like, that right there is where it's at. That's when you know you're talking with someone who has found a way to build passion, to build purpose into their business. They've gone beyond the phase where they're just looking at the numbers and the revenue as their end goal or the goals. And they're looking at the numbers and the revenue as a way to build this platform to make their bigger difference. Wow, guys and gals, if Carlos's story doesn't fire you up to think bigger, I don't know what will. And that's one of the biggest things I've learned myself in the last 3, 4, or 5 years is usually the only thing that stops us from getting in the way of doing big things is what's between our ears. You know, it's our own heads, it's our own mindset. And if we can find ways for ourselves to think bigger, to transcend the limiting beliefs that hold us back and make us think small, that's how we really make the big impact in the world. Can you imagine if Carlos would have went out there and said, you know, I want to be a multifamily investor, and I want to acquire 100 properties, 100 units. What kind of impact would he be able to make with that goal versus 2,000, 3,000, 4,000? It's not even close. Okay, it's not even close. So what ways are you holding yourself back right now? What limiting beliefs are you putting in front of your way to make yourself shoot so darn small? Maybe you're thinking big. What ways can you think bigger? Does it make sense to think bigger? What impact can you make with that big thinking that you're making? Okay, go out there, guys and gals. Think big this week. Try to challenge yourself on how big you're thinking and how much impact that thinking is having for you. And if you haven't already, go subscribe to CarrotCast on iTunes, CarrotCast.com, or just go to the iTunes, Google, or search us over there on iTunes. And also, make sure you tell people about this. If you're enjoying the CarrotCast, please go tell people about it. Shout it from the rooftops. Go to Facebook. Send it through to people. Send it on your email list. Whatever it is, let people know about the CarrotCast. If you're getting fired up with these episodes, if you're coming away with actionable stuff that you can put into place in your life and your business. Okay. And check out our past CarrotCast episodes with other people like Tom Kroll, my buddy Alex Pardo, who's doing 5+ deals a month and does very little in his business right now in Florida. He systemizes so much. He's going to walk you through how to hire your first people. Okay. What about, Justin Lee, my buddy, who, we just did an episode with, 2 or 3 episodes ago, who, is a crazy, crazy active investor, travels the world with his kids and structures things in a way to where he's crushing it in life and business, leveraging interns, people who he doesn't have to pay to do the work, who are helping him close deals for him. Okay. Go check out the other CarrotCast episodes, and also let us know what you want to hear. Who do you guys want to hear on an upcoming episode of the CarrotCast? Just go over to our website, CarrotCast.com, find an episode in there, go to the comments box, and let us know who you want to listen to. Okay. If there's things you want us to dive into in our world, let us know those things as well. We would love to open up the kimono, as you could say, and show you guys what we're doing in the carrot world as well. If there's anything specific you want us to dive into. Have an amazing rest of the week. Go out there, make your impact, guys and gals, and think bigger. Use Carlos as inspiration to think bigger. Thanks, guys and gals. See you in the next episode of the CarrotCast.